Hello, this is the podcast from November 17, and it's our class number 25. And in this class, we took up the causes of action for trespass and nuisance. And I hope you can see from the class that these two causes of action, and they're separate, you know, individual causes of action, are very much related to our last class on strict liability, because basically they're strict liability torts, and they're related to what we talked about, Rylan C. Fletcher, non-natural uses of the land. They're not, nothing is abnormally dangerous in any of the cases that we looked at. There's no activities, but it's, these are property-based torts. The property-based torts. Now, remember, before we had strict liability for activities. Now we're having, it's kind of a strict liability for property, these property-based torts. So before it was, we had strict liability, abnormally dangerous, ultra-hazardous activities. Now it's trespass and nuisance are property-based torts. And why am I saying it's strict? Because they're not dependent upon intent or negligence. So strict is going to be our third category. Property-based torts. There's something about these two torts that relates to either property ownership, possession, something in these torts that tells you my rights as a property owner possessor have been infringed upon by somebody else's activities. So they're property-based torts, and as such, because we give such a great deference to the rights of property owners, the infringement itself is the injury. It's the damage. So we're not looking for strict monetary damages. Just having the trespass or the nuisance is the damage. So trespass depends upon an entry onto your land. It's an interference with your possession, and that interference needs an intentional entry of some sort. Intent is important. Intent is necessary. If it takes it away from strict liability, the strict liability like the blasting cases, because that doesn't require intent or negligence. Here, there has to be an intentional entry. It doesn't have to be wrongful, and it could be innocent, based on wrong information, but an intentional entry onto another's property, either by a person, a thing, or as we saw in the Reynolds case, it could be by, you know, some sort of intangibles. Now, Reynolds was, again, a good illustration of how far the courts can go. Usually intangibles, if they're really intangible, would be come under nuisance. But here, the important issue with the Reynolds case was that it had to be that intangibles entered the land. So these were minute particulates, but minute didn't matter. Every time one of them entered their property, it was an intrusion, and that's what these torts guard against, is the intrusion. So intent is purpose or substantial certainty for the end result to occur. So the, again, in Reynolds, they didn't mean for these, you know, they weren't wafting them over to the plaintiff's property, but it was substantially certain if they ran their aluminum plant that these particulates would go across the road onto the neighbor. Remember, this is like Rylan C. Fletcher, non-natural use of the land, and it's strict. the property goes on to the neighbors. Strict liability, of course. Under Rylance v. Fletcher, they needed some damage. Here it doesn't, we don't have any real damage. But still under trespass, the trespass is the damage. So you're not suing under Rylance v. Fletcher's strict liability, but it's basically strict. In the case of nuisance, nuisance is just substantial interference with the use of enjoyment of your land. So it doesn't require an entry like trespass required. It just, and it can be something that is going on next door. The halfway house, the noisy jazz club, the strip joint, anything that, like I said, NIMBY, not in my backyard, brings in undesirables, you say that it interferes with the use and enjoyment of your property. One of the things about nuisance, and can happen in trespass, is that basically we're talking about inconsistent uses of property. Your use of your property is restricting my use of my property. And it might be two businesses. It could be a business and a neighbor, two neighbors. Whatever you're doing is making under nuisance is restricting the use of my property. So a lousy nightclub goes on till late. Brings in some a halfway house that brings in undesirables into the neighborhood. Anything that your use of your property can be restricting my use of my property. Not in a competitive way, but in a way that, you know, Walmart comes in, they don't provide enough parking lot. I mean, Walmart's not ultra hazardous, it's not, but they don't provide enough parking, so everybody parks all over the street. Maybe that's a nuisance. So again, it has to be substantial. It can't be for just the odd smoke or the odd smell. It has to be continuous, either, you know, it can be intermittent. It can be just during 9 to 5, or doesn't have to be 24 hours. But it has to be continuous and substantial. If we're just talking about consistent uses of the property to run your factory, it's going to make it impossible for me to grow my exotic plants because the factory is going to, any factory is going to emit enough pollution to kill my plants. The restatement has come up with ways to deal with that. 826A and B. 826B talks about, well, you know, if you've weighed whether something is unreasonable, and remember, unreasonable is a requirement for nuisance, and unreasonable isn't, we don't use it in the sense of reasonable care like we've seen before. We use it in the sense of wrong for that place. And we've got the two restatements that talk about, you know, the gravity of the harm, utility of the enterprise. If it's unreasonable, maybe you, in order to keep your business going, you pay off the other guy. Because one of the damages or remedies of a nuisance is an injunction. That's an extraordinary remedy that says, stop what you're doing now. And a lot of times people, that's all they want is just to say, stop what you're doing now. If you've got a major plant next door to your organic garden, stop what you're doing now. Don't keep polluting and ruining my organic food. And the court has, you know, there are two ways to deal with it. Corrective justice, correct the problem, give an injunction, or utilitarian. If the polluting plant is considered to be of greater utility, and the plant can keep operating, pay you off and keep operating, the idea is don't issue an injunction. Pay you off, pay off the plaintiff and keep on operating. Make it okay. Give the plaintiff enough money so that they don't have to be an organic farmer anymore. Make the plaintiff go away and keep on operating. That's utilitarian justice. The utility of the enterprise doesn't mean you're free. That's why we're sort of in strict. Doesn't mean you can keep on polluting and destroying all the places around you, but you can keep on polluting if you pay everybody off. I hope you have to ask, what do they need the court for to tell them that? I mean, economists will say that if in a free marketplace, that's what would happen anyway. But the real world isn't a free marketplace, and maybe people do need the courts to provide this solution. In any event, the utilitarians say, yeah, just pay off everybody and leave and you can keep polluting. The corrective justice people say, well, that doesn't give you any incentive to make anything safer. You just build it into your costs, built it into your prices, the cost of paying people off. Doesn't have anything to do with the bottom, the bottom line of less pollution. So the utilitarians versus the corrective justice people continue to be in a debate. Tort law is very bad at making big policy decisions. It's very good at providing a resolution to individual problems. But the you know, the cases themselves, talk about that they really can't address major problems all that well. It's right in the middle of Boomer. It says, effective control, right in the middle of the page, effective control of air pollution is a problem presently far from solution, even given the full public and financial powers of government. The court can't try to do this on their own as a byproduct of private litigation. The judicial establishment is neither equipped in the limited nature of any judgment. It can pronounce any judgment it can pronounce, nor is it prepared to lay down and implement an effective policy for the elimination of air pollution. Court said it's not our role to eliminate air pollution. We can't do it, but we can make a decision on individual cases. So the utilitarians win out. The corrective justice people, basically the court says, it's, you know, we can't do it. If you want there to be no air pollution, don't look to private litigation. Okay, so next class we're going to pick up with intentional torts. We already started talking about the meaning of intent. That's the big thing for you to learn for intentional torts. What's the meaning of intent? You're doing something with the purpose or substantial certainty that the results will occur. Purpose or substantial certainty.